So it's kind of like throw a dart and it'll be higher. But to get more specific, you know, when you get a bull market in these things, I mean, I expect gold to go from, you know, the 2,000 or 2,300 it's at now to maybe 3,000. So what's that, a 50% move? You know, I expect silver, which was kind of 24 at the start of this thing, to be at, you know, 48 within a year, maybe higher, you know, and then on its way to 100, you know, that's $50 an ounce, and, you know, maybe on its way to 75 or $100 an ounce. So that's a three or four bagger, whereas gold's going up 50% in the same kind of window. So that means that there's more leverage in the silver miners.
Larry, how you doing?
I'm great, Andy. Thanks for having me on your show. I really enjoy joining you.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming up on board. And I've been a distant fan here for really, it's been a couple of years. I love your work and love you saying it. As I mentioned off camera, I really appreciate that you have this very broad perspective, if you would, because that's very important in the macro sense of setting everything up. But then you're also very specific to the metals and also the metals companies. So help me navigate through that, because just really recently, I had two guests on recently that talked about the ending of the Bank Term Funding Program that ended, I want to say, in March. Well, I knew it ended on March 11. And really, that's a very big negative for the banks, obviously, that's, or it can be, that's ending. But yeah, where do we go from here? What's hitting? And also, it makes me think of, do they have something else to take that place, or how are they going to compensate for taking that away? What are your thoughts on that?
It's a great question. I mean, I have to admit, I was a little surprised they ended it too, but it was unclear in the terms of how they ended it. I think what, you know, as you know, when they first put it in place, it went to $80 billion pretty quickly, and then I think it crept up to $120 billion, $130 billion, which is interesting because, first of all, that number is a lot smaller than the amount that the banks borrowed from the Federal Home Loan Board. They borrowed about $1 trillion from the Federal Home Loan Board. They also went to the discount window. So it was just kind of the cosmetic thing that calmed everybody down, but it wasn't really where the big money was borrowed from. But I think, you know, they ended the ability to have new people come in and take out BTFP loans, but I'm not sure they required repayment on the old loans that were outstanding. It was kind of gray on that area. And as long as they didn't require repayment, then effectively that money is still out there. I don't know if somebody, if a listener knows the answer to that, they should put it in the show notes or tweet about it. But I mean, it's, you know, it is something that's interesting to me that they did it. I mean, you know, they take away with one hand, they give with another. I mean, they're, you know, they're running the reverse repo down, and that's causing the money supply to grow, or the base money supply to grow. You know, I'm sure they're thinking of other programs. I mean, I've been referring to this ISDA letter. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but
Am
the ISDA letter, ISDA, the Securities and Derivatives Association, which is really the banks, wrote a letter to the Federal Reserve saying, "We think you should change your supplementary leverage ratio, SLR, to not have treasuries counted as part of the leverage on the part of the banks." And effectively what that is the banks want to be able to borrow an unlimited amount of money from the Fed with which to buy treasuries. And so the banks would be the ones monetizing the debt. So that's kind of QE infinity. And yeah, it's complicated, but that's what it boils down to, right?
So that's huge.
Yeah, it is huge.
That's huge. So can we work that out a little bit more? So that's banks borrowing directly from the Fed, and I'm assuming they would never have to pay it back.
I think that's right. I think that's right. I mean, what's not clear is what the terms would be, but I'm assuming the Fed will make it on a, you know, in a basis where the banks can make a spread. And so, I mean, what we're kind of dancing around here, as we all know, is that, you know, the government's terribly over-indebted, and the debt is, you know, the cost of the debt, which is running at $1.1 trillion today, headed to $1.6, is really, you know, blowing a hole in the helping to blow a hole in the budget. And so, you know, the Fed's gotta find ways and means of getting people to buy the debt and make it look like they're not printing money. And, you know, a change in the supplementary leverage ratio would be one way of doing that. So I expect the Fed to continue to, as much as possible behind the scenes, try to keep, you know, the money spigot flowing. but try to hide it as much as possible as well, because they also know that everyone seeing that is going to therefore, anticipate inflation and pay, push the inflation rate up, right? So, the Fed is really horribly trapped, and they can't, with the leverage that exists in the system, they can't stop printing money or else everything will collapse.
Right.
But in turn, as you and I both know, that printing of money is what leads to inflation. And they've got a lot of people complaining about inflation, rightly so. They've kind of cooked the inflation prints, but they have managed, the prints have come down from, kind of 9 to 3. And my sense is, based on recent comments by Powell, that they're going to kind of declare 3 is good enough for government work. We're going to get to 2, and therefore we are going to do some cuts. Because if they don't do the cuts, as I said earlier, that $1.1 trillion interest cost that the federal government is now bearing is projected to go to 1.6 by the end of calendar 2024. So that's another, $500 billion of deficit. I mean, that's the other thing I should point out, that I just think I'm in the process of writing my first quarter letter, and so several things jumped out at me. The biggest one, and these are things that everyone's known, but you got to put them together. In the first quarter, or the fourth quarter of 2023, which is the first fiscal quarter because the federal government has a September year end, the government ran a $500 billion deficit. So if you annualize that times 4, it's a $2 billion run rate, and it's lumpy, and that may not be right, but it's close. In turn, they also recently, as well as Washington Times had headline that said, in 100 days, the government debt went up by $1 trillion. So U.S. federal government debt grew by $1 trillion in 100 days. Well, there are 365 days in a year. So if that rate were annualized, that would mean the federal debt is growing by $3.65 trillion per year, which is a lot bigger than the $2 trillion deficit, and which would probably represent a growth of 10% in the federal debt, whereas in GDP, I think, is growing at around 2.6 or 2.8. So, they're trapped in a mathematical doom loop where, the debt just keeps growing faster than the means to pay it. And really the only way out, Reinhart and Rogoff and all the studies have shown that, in all countries that have done this, where they've got the debt to GDP as high as it is, they're kind of 3 ways out. You can have a collapse, a debt collapse, and all the debt defaults, or you can have, high inflation, or you can have hyperinflation. My sense is obviously they want to avoid a collapse. They want to avoid hyperinflation, but I'm quite sure that they'd be willing. I mean, it's a bad choice, but they'll be willing to live with high inflation because that's their only way out. So I think high inflation is in our future, and that's why, the sound money assets, gold, silver, and Bitcoin are all, record highs and pushing higher, because I think the market, those of us who are in this community have known this for a couple of years, but we've been sitting back and waiting for it to happen. And what's happened now is it's becoming very clear. Everyone sees it. So that's what the markets are telling us. They know what's going to happen, even though the Fed hasn't formally pivoted. Although in his most recent press conference, Powell did say they might start reducing the quantitative tightening, which is by itself, that's a form of easing, right?
Right.
It's interesting. He said they might start doing that because they didn't want to encounter a problem similar to the problem they had in September of 2019 when the repo market fell apart, and that led to the first Powell pivot. So what you've got here is a federal agency that the market knows what they're going to have to do. Maybe even they know what they're going to have to do, but they're trying to delay it and hide it as long as they can.
Yeah.
So, but the market's calling bullshit, and that's why these metals are working so well.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about the metals here, but let's talk first about the bond market here.
Sure.
The interest rates are starting to spike here,
yeah.
And I guess that would be, give me your thoughts on the bond market, because that is not good as far as
It's really not. And this is a continuation of what we saw. I mean, we had a version of this in the fall of last year, right? As you'll recall, in September, October, the U.S. 10-year yield went from, you know, sub four, around four, up to well over five very quickly.
Right.
Kind of reminded me of the UK gilt crisis the fall before, you know, that caused Liz Truss to lose her job and for them to reverse their quantitative tightening and so forth. And what, you know, and this was in my fourth quarter report, we wrote about this, how when that happened, the alarm bells